Hi, Roger. Welcome to the show.
All right. Hello. It's nice to be here.
Where were you born and raised?
I was born in Paris, France, and mostly raised in New York City.
Were you surrounded by music at an early age?
Yes, I was. Well, in a sense that my parents loved to sing and play. Well, my mother played the piano, and my father played the piano a little bit too, and they played for me. And they encouraged me to develop my musical talents, which they could see from an early age.
Do you remember your earliest musical memory?
No, I don't. But my parents claim that I started to play the piano when I was 3. I remember playing the piano when I was about 4, and I started to pick up tunes that I made up in my head and just played them. Realized that I could improvise right away.
Do you remember the very first jazz concert you ever attended?
I do remember the first jazz record that I ever heard, which was Bill Evans. I knew I was a childhood friend of Helen Keane's son. I went to school with him, and then I met Helen Keane, and she used to take me to various recording sessions and concerts. My first jazz concert that she took me to was probably Woody Herman. And that's the earliest one I remember her taking me to. That was probably the first one I went to.
When I first heard your playing, your style reminded me a lot of B.G. Adair. Are you familiar with her work at all?
I've heard of her, and I'm not as familiar with her work as I should be.
Is there any one artist that has had the most profound influence on you as a musician?
In terms of the classical area, I've been a classical musician, particularly as a composer, and for several years as a conductor. And I would say that there are a lot of composers that have influenced me. One of them is Olivier Messiaen, the French composer, and Maurice Durufle, and some lesser-known composers. There's a German composer named Georg von Albrecht, whom very few people know about, but his choral music is extraordinary, and I've written a lot of choral music. And there are many other composers I could cite. Now, in terms of jazz, Bill Evans is one of my first influences. I heard him on recording very early, and I only got to hear him live much, much later, in 1980. It was one of his last performances.
You have a strong affinity for music from South America. Now, what is it about this music that makes it so vital and special?
Well, it's very engaging, it's very passionate. It makes you want to dance, and I have danced to it. I got to know the South American dances when I started ballroom dancing in 1988. And I went to a dance studio in New York City, and went to other studios when I moved out of the city. But I kept dancing for several years, and I learned all kinds of ballroom dances, Latin dances and smooth dances and all kinds of things. But some of my favorites turned out to be the Latin dances. And I started out with learning the mambo and then the rumba. And later I learned the bolero and other dances and the tango too.
You mentioned earlier Helen Keane. She was such a guiding force in the final years of Bill Evans' life. What was your impression of her when you had a chance to actually work with her?
Wonderful. She asked me to do a recording after she heard me play at a concert. I was performing actually one of my large compositions for piano and choir and instrumental ensemble. And she heard me play and came up to me afterwards and said, "I love the way you're playing. Let's talk about jazz." So we had lunch and we talked about jazz, and she said, "Would you like to play jazz?" And I said, "I'd love to." And in fact, I had been fooling around with jazz for some years, but I didn't know much about it as a player. So she hooked me up with a teacher, and then she hooked me up with David Fink, who taught me many things as well. And little by little, I found myself playing jazz. And in 1991, in fact, shortly after we started this process, I started a trio with David Fink and Dave Ratajczak, and Helen Keane produced that recording, which was originally intended to be a demo, but which then came out when I started Soundbrush Records years and years later as the recording called 10 to 12.
What are your thoughts on Bill Evans' compositions and the way in which he used chords and a keen sense of harmonic integration to create, you know, really some of the most beautiful music ever made?
Well, I would agree with you. It is some of the most beautiful music ever made, and I think it transcends what a lot of people think is jazz. It's the chords are unique to him, and a lot of people have imitated them. The chord changes and the way he shapes the lines, shapes the melodies, and he has an extraordinarily expressive, often introspective, often expressive. I said that already. Way of putting music across that's unique to him and really touches my musical soul and my heart, and I've always been moved by his music.
You also spent a considerable amount of time performing and writing classical music as well as other forms of music. Now, how has this experience helped you in recording your jazz repertoire?
Well, I'll tell you, there are two things that have helped. First of all, the experience as a composer and all the theoretical training I received in the music conservatory and all the years and years of work I've done with notes. And in fact, I started, you know, it helped me, but I did start writing jazz before I actually played it. And although I tried to play my own tunes, I only became better at it later in the later years. But I had, so I have that the background there. Then I have to tell you about something else. When I started ballroom dancing, I got the feeling that you really had to put the dance into jazz. So putting the feeling of dance into jazz is something I did consciously from 1988 onwards, and particularly when I started playing with David Fink in 1991, and at the time I met Helen Keane and actually recorded something, I was acutely aware of the rhythms and the pulse of the dance, ballroom dancing in particular.
If there was only one musician alive today that you would have a chance to record with or even perform with, who would that be?
If I could do a four hands, or no, if I could do a two piano improvisation session with Bill Evans, I would have loved to have the chance to do that. I would have loved to have a lesson with him as well. Wynton Kelly, I would have loved to meet. He went back a little bit, and you know, in the '50s, and played through other decades as well, of course. But I would have loved to meet him. I don't want to leave anyone out that I shouldn't leave out, and I'm sorry that I might be doing that.
That's okay.
But those are the two names that come to mind in jazz. Red Garland too. I would have loved to play with Stan Getz. I met Stan Getz and actually gave him some of my Brazilian tunes. I started writing Brazilian tunes back in the early 80s, Sambas and Bossa Novas, and showed him some of my tunes, and he took a look at them, and then unfortunately, not long after that, he passed away. So, I would have loved to spend more time with him. I met him at a jazz workshop in California in 1983.
He was quite a performer.
And
sure.
In terms of classical performers, the main performing vehicle I've had as a classical musician has been actually as a conductor when I was in my 20s. I conducted for several years. I had a community orchestra and then a professional chamber orchestra, and then I also but that didn't last very long because for various reasons, including the fact that I decided to go back to school and learn about choirs, and I went to Westminster Choir College in Princeton, New Jersey. Then I have to say there are many other musicians I could cite. I mainly think of fellow composers, but as far as performers, since that's what you asked, It's very hard to say. I'd love to meet Wynton Marsalis sometime and play with him in any medium. and maybe I'll get a chance to do that someday. I don't know.
Speaking of composers, it always amazes me how the great composers of our time, for example, Berlin and Porter and Rodgers.
Oh, I have to mention one more.
Oh, sure, go
ahead. I have to mention many, you know, I have to say there's a jazz trumpeter named Freddie Hubbard, and I used to listen to his early recordings. I used to love those. And but I could go on and on, and I'm just leaving everybody out. And I'd love to write pieces for many musicians that are too numerous to mention, so I'm not going to. Anyway,
yeah,
that's as far as I'm going to go on that one, but I could go on and on.
It's endless. It really is. Speaking of composers, it always amazes me how the great composers of our time, like Irving Berlin and Cole Porter and Richard Rodgers and Sammy Kahn, they always seem to inspire us with their writing. What is it about their music that's so special?
Well, you mentioned Richard Rodgers. I actually did a recording of Richard Rodgers' tunes, and I set them I arranged them in Brazilian style, but they ended up as most of the tunes that I recorded on that album, which is called Rodgers in Rio, ended up being sambas or bossa novas, and it was a lot of fun to do. And it was but the beauty of Richard Rodgers' tunes is their flexibility and what you can do with them, and the fact that they're such strong tunes that you can bend them and twist them in different styles, and you can still hear the tune as long as you keep actually playing the tune, and they make sense. And you could say that about a lot of other writers too, but that's certainly one of them.
Tony Bennett's going to be celebrating his 80th birthday this year, and I was wondering what your thoughts are on this great spirit of ours.
I love Tony Bennett. I always have. He sang with Bill Evans. In fact, I have the recordings that he did with him at home, and I've listened to them and loved them. So I'd love to meet Tony Bennett sometime, I have to say. That would be a great thing.
What projects do you have on the go for 2006?
I just recorded a new Brazilian album, and I don't know what the title of it is going to be, but it's my own Brazilian tunes that I wrote recently, and it's a jazz trio with added percussion, so it's basically a quartet, and I'm playing with David Fink again, who has been the only bass player I've recorded with so far, since 1991, and Paulo Braga, who's a well-known Brazilian drummer, is on drums, and Marivaldo dos Santos is on percussion. And we had a wonderful time doing that. That's one thing. Then, also for 2006, we just put out, just actually got it back from the manufacturer, but it's coming out soon, a recording by Raul Jarena. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Raul Jarena. He's from Uruguay, and he's a tango, a bandoneon player, who recorded an album himself that Sandbrush Records decided to take up. He was looking for a company to take it up, and we did. So we're very proud of that. And so that's a recording that I'm not on that we're producing. I'm also talking to Francisco Navarro, otherwise known as Pancho, who is a guitarist from Argentina, and he has recorded a solo guitar album that we're also planning to produce. And I'm going to meet with him soon and talk about which tunes to put on it, and I'm very excited about that, so we're putting that out as well. And I have other albums that I'm thinking of doing, which I can't tell you about yet, but we have other things in the works that may come out in 2006, but most likely 2007.
Sounds like you're pretty busy.
I am.
What brand of piano do you prefer playing?
I like it. If it's a good piano, it can be a variety of brands. I love Steinways. I love Burzendorfers, Beckstein, and then I have a Yamaha at home. Yamahas are very good. Can be very good pianos. They're very solid. I like Kawais as well. It depends. If the piano is in good shape and it's well voiced and well tuned, and the action is good, I can be fairly flexible.
In other words, it's up to the musician to make the music, right?
Yeah, basically it is.
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, you can complain about the piano, but ultimately you have to make music out of it.
Do you ever find time to practice?
Well, not much. I practice when I can, I play when I can, and a lot of my practicing involves composing new tunes, improvising, perfecting the way I, to the best of my ability, the way I actually play the tunes, particularly ones I'm about to record. But the you know, I leave quite a bit up to what happens during the recording session, and it works, seems to work pretty well that way, or what happens in the performance. But I have two small kids. I have 6-year-old twins. They keep me very busy, so you know, my practice time and my composing time is whatever I can create.
Do you ever find time to do any teaching?
I was a piano teacher for many years. I taught privately children and adults, and I had to stop. I'd like to get back to it at some point, but I just got too busy raising a family and also recording and producing and composing, and it was all taking up too much time. And I just had to stop teaching, but I like teaching, and I might get back to it.
When it comes to writing music, do you have a particular style that you use?
When I'm writing a big piece, and concert music, if I'm writing an oratorio, I'd started a few years ago and stopped, and then I'm going to get back to it, or the big oratorio that I wrote in the 1980s that Helen Keane heard. For big pieces, what I usually do is I start with a line on the page, a long line, and I divide it up into sections, and basically think about the subject matter of each section of the piece, and also think about the shape of the overall musical shape of the piece. If it builds to the top, to a climax in the middle, and then goes down, or what the overall shape of the piece might be. That I only usually know when it's, so I start getting into writing. But the first thing I usually do is to create an architecture of the subject matter of the piece so that I know what to focus on. Now, as far as when it's a smaller piece, if it's a suite or a string quartet or something else, I usually have some idea of what the themes are going to be fairly quickly, and then I work with the themes, and then it's a matter of crafting the piece using the themes and as best I can in a creative way throughout the piece, and the architecture pretty much creates itself, although I am conscious of the overall bird's eye view as well. Now, about jazz, I write on lead sheets, basically with melody and chords, and the melodies usually come quickly to me, and I refine them and work on them and work on the harmonies, and it's all done on one or two pages, and it's a different concept. Different, you know, it's a simple form usually, but it's a different way of working. Because I'm not, I don't write multiple voices for jazz. Some people do. And if I do want to do that, then I can either arrange it or get somebody to arrange it.
When it comes to writing, who's influenced your writing styles throughout your career?
There are many influences, I would have to say. By the way, since I believe you're from Canada, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been to Canada quite a few times. I have many friends there, and I've actually written a piece for a Canadian band, and more than one piece. And so I'm very fond of Canada, and one of the kinds of music that I wrote, thanks to being inspired by doing that, is military and concert band music, which I have not gotten out into the world very much yet, but I intend to do a recording of it. I might well do it in Canada.
That sounds interesting. So you have your fingers in a lot of pies. More,
I do.
So
I don't do everything at once, but you know, one thing at a time, and I go back from one thing to another thing, and sometimes I do two things at once. It's not easy, but yeah, I do what I can.
Is there an unforgettable music-related moment in your life that you'd like to share with us?
In 1976, I was in France listening to a choral concert with composers from around Europe. And this is where I mentioned the German composer Georg von Ablecht again. I heard a choral piece by him that completely enthralled me. And it was a whole language that influenced my early choral writing a lot. And it was itself, you know, inspiring. Not so much in terms of the words, but in terms of the music and the musical lines and the harmonies and the harmonic progressions. And that was an extraordinarily inspiring experience. And then another one I could say was the performance of Bill Evans in a club in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And that particular club, I think it's since closed down, but that was in 1980, and I heard it. And he turned the place, he practically turned the place into a church. Everybody was putting their drinks down. There was total silence, and they were listening to him the whole time.
That's the thing about Bill's music, though. It just drew you right in.
That's right. It was a great loss to the world that he passed away so young.
Oh, it was terrible. I mean, it was back in 1980 that he, and he was very young, yeah.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned, the 1940s was an amazing decade when it came to music. You know, there was so much going on. There were different ideas and concepts discussed on the bandstand. Do you ever place yourself in this decade and wonder what it must have been like playing with some of the great musical geniuses of the time?
I do wonder, and I wish I could go back there and do just that. And I wish I could meet the guys, the big jazz bands, and also the, you know, the musical experimentation that was going on in Europe with, you know, writing pieces that crossed over into jazz. That happened way back before the 1940s, but I'm just thinking in general, in that era, I would have loved to be, you know, in a time machine and be able to go back there. And wish somebody had a time machine I could temporarily sneak into.
It would be a lot of fun.
You can't do that. So
exactly.
You have to be where you are, when you are, and put all your heart and soul into life and appreciate the things that people have done before. Because I'll tell you, this is not just about the 1940s, but it's a corollary to your question. I don't, you know, consider anything I do to be separate from what has come before me. I appreciate the building blocks that have come before what I did, and I think every composer does, that that have made the development of music what it is, and have made possible the language that we use today and enabled us to build on it or keep it the same or just refine it or imitate it or whatever we want to do.
Let's talk about 10 to 12. How did this release come about?
10 to 12 started out as a demo produced by Helen Keane in 1991 with myself on piano, David Fink on bass, whom she introduced me to, and Dave Radicek on drums. And we got together in my apartment and practiced, and then, at the time I was learning a lot about jazz, so I was studying. I took a few lessons from a jazz piano teacher. I also had some instruction in jazz from Dave Fink himself, and from Helen, and they got me going, and so she put together a recording, mostly of my tunes, but also a few standards. And we went into a studio in New York, and we recorded it. And so, nothing came of it commercially, because she said, well, let's see what else you can do. And then for a while, I was doing other things and I didn't lose touch with her, but I don't remember exactly why we never got around to another recording, but she did pass away a few years later, unfortunately, and I guess she wasn't too well before that. I wish I had had an opportunity to do another recording with her, but anyway, years and years later, and I miss her very much, I have to say. So I remember her memorial service, and I think the world mourns the loss of Helen Keane and appreciates her legacy, and I certainly appreciate her legacy and honor her memory every day. Now, years and years later, what happened is that I started Soundbrush Records. It was very small, and we weren't really active until very recently, and they were just beginning to get off the ground in the early stages of things. And my new manager, who became the managing director of Soundbrush Records, Alex Aaron, said, "Why don't we put this out?" So I said, "Why not?" and we put it out, and it's gotten a fair amount of airplay and great reviews, actually. And so I was very encouraged to get that feedback, and very happy with the feedback that everybody's given me about it.
Do you have a favorite track from this album?
To be honest with you, I don't have it right in front of me, but let me see if I can remember. I think I like a lot of them. One of them might be Sweet Memory, or the second one, or Bernie's Tune is a great one. Mm-hmm. I didn't write that. I'm not, you know, it doesn't have to be one I wrote. Mm-hmm. Bernie's Tune is a good one. And also I Should Care, the first one. I like all of them, actually.
Actually,
I can't say there's one that I like less than another.
There's one that stands out for me, and that's Ballad for a Future Day.
Ballad for a Future Day is a special tune. I wrote it for my wife, because shortly after I met her, I was dreaming that, not at night, but, you know, I was thinking, you know, that maybe someday we'd get together and make it permanent, which is what we eventually did. And this was back in 1991, and we were dating at the time. And this was shortly after we actually got together. So I was already thinking about that. I just found myself thinking about that. Maybe I was jumping the gun and rushing things, you know, but anyway, that's how I felt at the time. And it turned out to be prophetic.
There's another album that you released that I find quite entertaining, and that's Bingo. How did that come about?
Well, that was so much fun. I'll tell you how that came about. I was in the living room, and my children were dancing around, and I was playing Ba Ba Black Sheep for them. You know the tune. Ba Ba Black Sheep, have you any wool? And I found myself playing it in a samba version. So I improvised a samba version of Ba Ba Black Sheep. And so I made up my own chords, and my son kept asking me to play it over and over again, and my daughter danced too, and you know, then they kept wanting to hear it over and over and over again, and pretty much they wouldn't let me stop playing it. So I decided, Lim, this is the beginning of something. I've got to do something with this. This is, you know, I don't know where this is going to go, but I'm going to write other Brazilian versions of children's tunes. So I proceeded to do that, and then I got together with my manager Alex, and I said, guess what? I think I have the makings of a children's album that nobody's ever done before that I've heard of, is writing Brazilian versions of English language children's songs. And it was so much fun to do. So that's what we ended up with. And there are also some Caribbean rhythms on that record too. So we call it, you know, well-known children's songs in the subtitle, I think, is something like children's songs with Brazilian and Caribbean rhythms. And it's gotten great reception. We've given some concerts with the Bingo Band. We decided to call the band Bingo, by the way. And we've done some concerts in Manhattan and Pennsylvania so far. We haven't gotten around anywhere else yet, but hopefully we'll go to Canada sometime.
Oh, that would be great.
If you invite us, we'll go.
For sure. Yeah, that'd be great. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you today, Roger.
Well, thank you.